I've had some clarification on this issue of domestics. Domestic workers are not included in the list of people who should be going out to work from today. Down to brass tacks. Hello? This person says, regarding NASA's proposal, surely the spirit of his point is, businesses should not be given free lunches. Governments, socialist or not, have innumerable ways of recouping taxpayers' investments in private companies. What do you think? Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon.
I would like to know if the maintenance people, you know, the girls who come and do maintenance around your home, cut your hedges, your lawns and stuff like that, I want you to come and do my business to me.
They're not open for business yet either, I don't think.
Let me
check the directives, because, you know, these directives that have been sent out can be quite useful in that regard. So let me see what they're saying here. Right, approved places you may go irrespective of the alphabet system. Let me see here. Sales, general guidelines. I'm going to check that for you shortly.
Okay.
But I don't think that they are allowed to operate just yet. You got your in your situation, you're saying that it is particularly bad right now. The grass.
No, my head's getting a little bit too tall, and I want it leveled down. You know what I mean? And the thing about it is, I don't mind paying him the money, cause he need the money, right? Until he come out to do the thing for me, cause he was doing it for a couple of years now. You know, and he called me and asked me if he could come out and do the thing. I said, well, I can't really tell you if to come out and do the thing, but if it's so desperate, I will still pay you the money, right? Cause he's that honest, you know. My next question to you is, being Barbados, got to learn to manage change, whether we like it or not, right? You say that the international world do online transactions. We can do it here too, right? It's just a matter of time. They have a lady in Jamaica. She makes cakes, right? And she ships them out, but there's
okay.
Certain criteria.
just let me point out that it says here that landscape, gardening, and pool services can operate between 8 and 4. 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon.
Okay.
So you can call that person and say to them, that you need the work done, yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so as I was telling you about this cake making stuff, right? She has her business set up, but she cannot ship a whole cake. You got to cut it in four, right? Because the people who deliver it to your door say that these are certain criteria which has to be met by customs. And she's just a single person. And if she can't do it, other people can do it too. You know what I mean? It is not hard to set up a website. You know, if they can't afford it, all they have to do is contact the college and bring somebody on board on attachment and give them a stipend, and they're going to do the work for them good, and they ain't got to pay no red page, designing a big bucket of money, right? It ain't hard. They have to do it at some point in time, whether they like it or not. Because if you order something from company A overseas online, I ain't calling the name, right? Within a matter of 4 days, the item is here in Barbados, right? You only have to wait on customs to declare the goods. And if it can come from United States that easily, why can't we do it here too? We have to do it in relation to the paying online for your vehicles and stuff, right? To trace the people who do not pay NIS and pay WAI, all they have to do is put in a field in there, right? One for NIS and one for PAYE. And if they don't pay NIS or PAYE, you understand, they got to declare themselves as a pensioner. And if they can't declare themselves as a pensioner or an unemployed, it would not be sent. The form will not be sent, and the license will not be approved. And for those that see people who do not pay NIS, you would now know exactly why it is. So they got to put in this fee. If they got a taxi, do you have a taxi? Yes. Okay. Next fee. Do you pay NIS? yes or no, and you're putting it, right? And if you don't pay NIS, you can't send it, because it can reject it. It's just a matter of programming and the developer doing the right things.
Okay.
It's that easy. You know, you could bring all these people on board.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much.
That's all I got to say.
Thank you very
much.
You're welcome. Dr. Brastacks, hello. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Pleasant day to you. I've been listening. The word pay online, is that you pay with money or you just pay online? The reason for that is that only within recent times, you and I would know that Barbadians have started to process accounts that would have money on them to pay various bills. But then there was a time when the banking system in this country was charging people unnecessary charges, and people were scared of at least having existing accounts because of that. So in order to be able to pay online, in order to be able to pay, then there got to be a source, and that means that you must have money in order to pay your bills. And the source of the money comes from whether it's pension or you said a little earlier that we live from paycheck to paycheck. But there must be a situation involved where money must be there. You can't pay online or you can't have the services unless you've got what to have the services with. I called you, Mr. Ellis, as well on the corona and the situation in terms of those who have passed. I noticed that they move it from now 9 to 20. And I believe that however you look at it, there's still a situation of unhappiness, but you have to proceed with protocol. That is to say that protocol stands out. But I sat and I concentrate on mentally how families can still feel contented. That is that I believe that graveside burial with social be placed and no the social be put in place where people will stay away from people and there be no greetings. Now, the reason I'm saying that is that there is a cost attached to the burial. And you and I would know that in the church, you have to pay for the church, you have to probably pay for the choir, you have to pay for the organ. There's a whole set of attached things you have to pay for. Why the graveside burial could mean that you can reduce the cost of the burial and still have a further attendance than the 20 people to the funeral. Because the undertakers of today, the funeral directors of today, are no program where they've got their own PA system that can operate off the grave and that they can be able to be in control of the service. The other aspect of it, Mr. Ellis, is that when you look at the cost attached and you look at the duration is that if you went into the church, there's a possibility that the service in the church would be at least about 40 to 45 minutes. Then you still have to go to the burial site. If you go straight to the burial site, then the service can be at least 30 to 40 minutes and you reduce costs all along. So I'm saying regardless of what the family might have planned for you, because of protocol, now we have to understand the protocols create this. And there's some families who would love to have a massive turnout. There's some families who can afford a massive turnout. But in order to have the program of burials continue and continue at a reduced cost, I would probably think that the best way to go is a graveside burial.
Well, things have changed a lot in that regard because of the fear of COVID-19. Indeed, today is the day when someone that I have known for some years now is being buried in the late Lionel Toppin, better known to those of us in a particular group as Lyo. And it has meant that, you know, there's that restriction and only a certain number of people will be able to attend the funeral. What has happened is that we have had a situation where the funerals are now streamed online as well. I mean, I never got the chance to say it or didn't say it earlier, but I also wanted to extend condolences to the family of the late Astor B. Watts, who used to be a caller on this program. And surely, notwithstanding the differences of opinion that could arise from time to time on the politics, Mr. Watts was, to my mind, one of the people I love to hear because, I mean, he expressed his point of view very clearly. He spoke very well, and he was always so gracious in the way that he spoke on air. And, I mean, I admired him immensely. I thank God, though, that there are some people in this country who cut across political lines. You know, the people of Barbados change the government from time to time. We find ourselves in situations where sometimes the views that we hold on the politicians and the political parties and their supporters will change from time to time. But in all of that, I am really impressed to see that there are some people who have been B's and there are people who have been D's, that no matter what, you've been able to have a relationship with them, and you know there's a respect and that sort of thing, which I really, really treasure. And Astor B. Watts brought out that sentiment in me, you know, on many occasions. And you know, may he rest in peace. And so I feel the same way about my friend Layo, who has now gone to the great beyond. But you know, there are so many people, I mean, who have it rough with their dearly departed. There is nothing worse than what the people whose loved ones have died from COVID are going through. I mean, you don't get an opportunity. You don't get an opportunity to say goodbye. You know, you don't. The whole question. I've seen a host of funeral services now being postponed. Memorial services are supposed to take place later. You look at the paper on Sundays and you see, you get a good sense of the people who've died abroad, you know, the Bajans who've died abroad. And, you know, it's very, very difficult for people because, you know, that element of closure is very important for many.
I want to take this opportunity because I've known Astor for more than 60 years. Truly respected, had nothing to do with any political affiliation. He was the type of person who always ready to give you the advice that's extremely important. So I support you in what you said about Astor. But when we come back to these people who die within the virus period, some of these people have not died from virus.
That's correct. Right?
From the virus, but because of the protocol, they are suffering. The families.
But we took your point, though. I understood what you were saying.
My point, Mr. Ellis, is that I want to find out if what I've heard is true. For example, I can say that I had someone who died of the virus, mm-hmm. and my son, who she's the mother of, was of the opinion that he will get the ashes, and that he will return the ashes to Barbados for burial. This is weeks now that.
But there are no flights. There are no flights.
No. Okay, let's assume. But he was told that there's no ashes. It appeared that people who died from the virus, that there's some restrictions as far as the ashes are concerned.
This happened in the United States?
This happened in the United States.
Right.
I hope that can be confirmed one way or the other, because a lot of people, and you have just said it, said that people will be cremated, and most of these people have made for memorial services back in Barbados. But if the ashes descend, seem not to relate whether the body, if there's an after result as far as the ashes are concerned or the body is concerned. So this is something I would probably leave to one of the funeral directors in Barbados to explain if the ashes are coming forward or if they will not come forward.
Well, a lot depends upon how the people in New York in particular are dealing with this in light of the fact that they've been so overwhelmed. So, you know, they have found themselves in such a pickle over the large number of people who've died that they have had to make mass graves in some instances. you know. And apart from mass graves, I don't know whether they are how they're dealing with cremation in the circumstances. Maybe there may also be some concern. I think even here, people are asking about whether you perhaps don't need to have the COVID patients who died buried in a particular area. I suppose I heard one funeral director raised that question with me some weeks ago. I suppose quite similar to what had happened in the cholera outbreak period, you know. So there's still these questions about how long the virus lives and that sort of thing. Some people say no, you don't have a fear. Some people still have the fear, you know.
In closing, I'm just concerned that there are lots of people who have a friend who have died outside of the virus, who have died from another cause, but the protocol hampers their burial. I've also known of families, I know of a family who has a daughter now in Afghanistan who would like to come home for the funeral of a mother.
She's in Afghanistan?
Yeah. The whole thing about this is that they have not released the bodies or anything like that. So even if she comes, she has to do a quarantine
Let me tell you, the people who have had loved ones that have died in like shootings and that sort of thing here and need an autopsy, well, they have been waiting forever to get these autopsies done because of COVID too. I know of one case where somebody has been shot dead, and I don't think that funeral has taken place. That thing must have taken place. The incident occurred must have been about 4 weeks ago or something like that. And you can hear nothing.
I'm going to run, but I can support you in this. I know of a young lady who died 2 weeks ago, and there has been no autopsy so far as she's concerned, and she did not die of COVID.
Right.
So it seems as if there's a backlog of the autopsies being done and the release of the body to the...
Well, there is, you see, in Barbados right now, the focus has been so heavily fixed on COVID that we are losing sight of the implications associated with it, the many other things that are affected because of the focus on COVID and the fear of COVID, you know. And that is a story that needs to be told bit by bit. Thank you very much, Mark. Down to brass tacks.
Peace be unto you in the name of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir. How are you?
By God's grace, I'm richly blessed. I also want to share with you my friend Leo, who will be, you know, interned today, because we worked together for many years and we were friends for many years, and he'd been so helpful to me, you know, and I grieve at his loss also. And to the family and, you know, and everyone who know him, you know, I share that thought. Now, Mr. Ellis, I called you today because after hearing Mr. Nasser speaking, I listen to the program every day. I'm here. I find it really pleasant to consume my time. And I listen to him and I listen to a lot of people. But I was trying to make the point, as a business person or a business-minded person, not really a business person, because this is something that I read in a business book written by an Egyptian many years ago. Business is not completed until the paperwork is completed. And the paperwork has to be before the work. You understand what I just said, Mr. Alice?
You expand on it.
Now, what I mean to say is, when you have to go, somebody call you to do a job for them, regardless of whatever is the discipline, electrical or whatever it be, you have to give them a paper to to write in their own words what it is that they wanted done. You will also then take that paper and tell them as a professional what ought to be done according to the, you know, protocol of the business, because there are a lot of people who want electrical work done, but they're not aware of the electric laws and conditions. And some people feel in mind that you can just up and do something. Oh, don't mind what the law say. Don't mind what the government say. Don't mind what this body say. Do it. But they're not even sure what they want done. And then sometimes they make arrangement with you to do this and do that. Halfway you in the job and doing as they prescribe, their friends come and tell them something. They come and tell you, I want that change. But you are not able to change the price, the agreement that you had to do the first recommendation. And that is where a lot of the business I was fighting for years. I am not working now. As you know my position, you personally know me, Mr. Alice.
Yeah.
But I still have that conviction. And even Mr. Nasser, I want Mr. Nasser to know that I am the happiest man in the world. There's nobody as happy as me. Because of my spiritual belief. And I know that man don't live by bread alone. And therefore, that has helped me a lot. Thanks to the people, my teacher.
All right. Thank you very much. This person says that he applied for an online account at a bank. The bank told me I had to pay $50 for it. And that every time I top up the account, I had to pay 1% of the deposit. And then I got to find out a few days after that, they had gotten some of these accounts free of costs from other banks. I don't understand that. But he says, I was so furious that I went the following week and closed that account. Do you know I had to pay a fee for closing that online account as well? I asked if I could be refunded my money for opening that account and was told no. I was a member of that bank for over 18 years. I am only waiting until what is going on here gets a bit better. And I am cleaning out my account and taking my money to the credit union. I can't wait, says the writer. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Mr. Ellis, three quick things. One, I sent a message to you guys with respect to the government offices updating their information on their websites.
Yeah.
The information is old. Mm-hmm. Old directors' names, old telephone numbers, and
right.
So on.
Uh-huh.
It's needed right now.
Yeah.
So I hope that you would express that for me, please.
But you've expressed it for yourself. So why do I need to express it for you? You've done a good job.
I've done a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Secondly, after the Depression in the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt instituted what you called, as you were speaking to Mr. Nasser, socialist programs. The U.S. government instituted programs where they would find work for the people because the private sector was not doing it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
At this present moment, under Mr. Trump's presidency, his finance guy, which is the equivalent to our finance minister here, has expressed that there will be no free bailouts. What Mr. Nasser suggested is exactly what is going to be happening there. So if the United States are going to call our socialist actions, they started it. Thirdly, I was listening to Brass Tacks yesterday, and I heard Ambassador Maskell expressed that the pandemic has shown the need to really focus on agriculture domestically. And President Verla de Pisa, if she's still the president of the DRP, she also expressed that now Barbadians realize the mistake in selling the Barbados National Bank. Now, for me, if it has taken COVID-19 pandemic for both parties, DLP and BLP, to realize that there was a need to focus on our agriculture sector more seriously and stop all of this great import and to try and reestablish a national bank, it would mean that they were not listening to the masses. This is my opinion. They were listening to special interests, not the masses. Because since I've been home since 2010, I've been hearing people calling so many times and speaking about the agriculture sector and how it is being destroyed because of the imports that is coming from subsidized farmers on the outside. I myself have spoken to Mr. Johnson and yourself and so on about it. With respect to the bank, which is my pet peeve, I've so many times got shut down so many times. But now the pandemic now has caused them now to really wake up. So this is evidence, in my view, that they were not listening to the masses who put them in power. They were listening to the special interests and not the masses.
All right, I want to share something with you because this thing, it began by saying that the Americans are, the government is taking a stake in the businesses that are being bailed out. That's what you said. All right.
This is what I said.
Well, I see a piece here that says the U.S. government has now pledged almost $3 trillion U.S. dollars to save the economy and Americans from the coronavirus recession. Most of that is aimed at individual Americans in the form of additional unemployment insurance or the so-called economic impact checks. About $1.2 trillion and counting represent bailouts for American companies, large and small. And more than 60% of that, note this, more than 60% of that is in the form of grants or other financial assistance that will likely become grants, funds that will not be recovered by taxpayers. The Congressional Budget Office estimated on April 23rd that the company-related coronavirus bailouts, excluding the fourth one just signed into law, will ultimately cost more than $400 billion over 10 years. Given that most of the latest bailout, worth $484 billion, will most likely end up becoming grants to small businesses as well, the price tag is bound to get a lot higher. It may not come as a surprise that taxpayers ultimately foot the bill when lawmakers spend their money to bail out a corporate industry such as Wall Street during the Great Recession or the entire economy today, but this is actually the exception, not the rule. Now, I want you to tell me, where can I go and find this information that says that these people, these companies, the small and the big, that are getting this money, the government of the United States is taking a stake in it. One of the first criticisms of the first wave of money that went to these companies was that well-to-do companies were getting it. All right? And I'm going to tell you, I listen to a lot of this stuff. I never heard that the government of the United States was taking any stake in it, in
Mr.
those
Ellis,
companies.
Mr. Ellis, you just asked me a question, right?
Where?
And I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
On YouTube, there was a press conference with the same gentleman from the Trump administration, a live press conference, and he made it abundantly clear. There will be no free bailouts for these big boys.
But what does that mean? That doesn't mean that the United States is taking a stake in it?
That's what he said. He said, if you want this money, which is the taxpayers' money, you have to give the taxpayers something. We have to have investments in those companies. You can't just take our money and walk away.
Look, let me say something to you. If what you are telling me is true, then I got to be able to find it somewhere here. And I ain't seeing it.
That's you.
It's too big.
My research, why you can't do yours?
No. I am asking for guidance.
I told you where you are.
All right, give me the name of this. You told me, is it what? The Treasury Secretary? That's what you said?
No, is it the Treasury Secretary? Treasury Secretary?
Uh-huh. Who is it?
Treasury Secretary, hold on.
I just want to find it.
Hold on.
I'm not... Mnuchin?
Not Mnuchin. This is a guy that is inside the White House with Mr. Trump.
Five days ago, Steve Mnuchin said that he's the Treasury Secretary. He said that while he was having conversations with states regarding federal stimulus money, the federal government was not focused on covering loss revenues for states with mismanaged finances. So that's a separate matter altogether. That is as it relates to the states. He's not talking about any of the companies. Anyhow, if you find it, send it to me because I don't.
He works for a private entity.
Who's that?
Mnuchin. Isn't he the head of the Federal Reserve?
No. Steve Mnuchin is
the
Treasury.
Federal Reserve that he's a part of?
Steve Mnuchin is the Treasury Secretary.
Is that for the Federal Reserve?
For the government.
No,
for the Trump administration, not the Federal Reserve. He's Treasury Secretary. Okay? Anyhow, the conversation must continue because it is an important issue here. And there's a lot of emotion associated with this issue of if you're getting money from the government, what is required of you? What do you bring to the table? And there are those who will say to you, the only reason the government is giving money is because it knows that business is important. And that if business fails, jobs are lost. And if jobs are lost, there's a lot of political fallout and sometimes social upheaval associated with that. So how is the government, this is the issue, how is the government going to ensure that it gets something more than just the job and the taxes? That's what you all are asking for. Let's hear the discussion on it. Down to brass tacks.
United States can print money at will because the market for their dollar is ever present. Trump just printed $3 trillion just so. Their debt is probably around $27 trillion now. And their debt probably is owed to themselves more than anyone else. They can print enough money to put money in the pockets of every single. In fact, with $3 trillion plus, they could have put maybe $10,000 in every single American at once. Everyone. You know, so they could live for another 3 or 4 months. But it doesn't happen that way. The argument about the taxpayers bailing out operations, and in turn, the taxpayers get their money back, happens in Barbados too. This is not what I really want to talk to you about, but see, you started the conversation, I mean, that way. Let me continue a little bit. When we bought the National Bank, and then the ex-prime minister comes back and says the National Bank is earning more for the taxpayers than when we actually owned it. I was a taxpayer when they were buying the bank. So were you. So was Dennis Johnson. And you nor me nor Dennis Johnson got red cent back when these people pay back what it is that they borrow from taxpayers. So it's very well and good for Mr. Trump or Mr. Arthur or any other prime minister or president to come and say that taxpayers can bail out an operation with taxpayers' money, because the taxpayers are going to get something back, which is not happening. Taxpayers don't get anything back. It just goes back into the purses of the Consolidated Fund, and maybe the public service might get something from it. But as taxpayers who have actually been participants in the same bailing out will never get anything back. So I think it's a misnomer about these people coming with the argument where, you know, the government has to get some kind of return, you know, or the taxpayer has to get some kind of return because of the investment in the first place. They never get anything back. In the case of the U.S., where they go and put a lot of money behind military interventions and everything else, the taxpayers don't benefit from that at all, period.
Hence, what is your take on the suggestion that the government should take equity in entities that it supports in this way?
I don't even think that. I mean, I think that governments really and truly, well, okay, let's move on to the part then I would have liked to speak. Well, let me do that, because that's we'll be headed there. If government is to bail or is support a business of some kind, that business has to be productive. It most certainly has to be. I heard Mr. Maskell speaking yesterday, and he didn't in any way talk to the whole issue of dealing with, you know, nobody. Manufacturers don't need grants. They need tacit support. Tacit support. Buy from them and demonstrate to the rest of the world that they are worthy of your attention. And by so doing, then the rest of the world will take them seriously and perhaps buy from them as well, too. Any kind of spend has to be strategic in that way. If I support the operation, it's not because I just want to employ people. It's because that person is offering something that the rest of the world could certainly become interested in if given time. That is the kind... The argument that you hear, I used to hear years ago, oh, it's so expensive to buy local. You know, after the crash in 2000 and the other crash that took place in 2008 and now this crash, every 10 years they're going to be throwing something at you. Some foolishness, whether it's man-made or God-made, they're going to be tossing something at you to deal with. The response has always been, let's turn inwards now and see at least if we can support our own. So if it comes again, we'll be better prepared to deal with it. It never really happens, does it? Mr. Maskell spoke at length yesterday, and he did not speak about supporting your own product. Yeah, you know, you finally got something that says, okay, we'll start dealing with Prager larceny. You know, the lady, the lawyer woman comes and says, no, not larceny no more. It's just grand theft. Yes, yes, yes. It's about time you start dealing with the farmers because, you know, at least you could feed yourself. Finally, after 20 years. But what about those people who can actually produce stuff beyond farming? And in so doing, you know, employ a hell of a lot more people. To my mind, it makes sense. If a fridge costs $10 US and you buy and you go pay $30 Barbados, if it was made in Barbados, it makes sense because you recognize that US money is so hard to come by now. It was very hard to come by in 2001. It was hard as hell to come by in 2009, 2010, 2011. It's even harder to come by now in 2020 and 2021. The US money is not pegged correctly. We know this. We know it's hard to come by. So it is not a difficult assessment to make when it comes to buying local as opposed to overseas. You cannot just be spending money just like that because you don't have it anymore. We don't have tourism to earn any money. And indeed, the international business has been challenged for at least 5 years now. So those two major pillars of our ability to earn overseas are no longer available to us. So the U.S. money is like gold wrapped up in a diamond. It's extremely very... you know, you can't be jumping on a plane and traveling, you know, willy-nilly. So if you can buy something and you can make it local, first, if you can make a bus in Barbados that could travel up hills because, that, you know, the hills in Bathsheba and, you know, run on electricity, buy them buses first before you go overseas and bring in buses. Huh? If you can deal with contracts and stuff that can be made locally by local lawyers and stuff and negotiations and stuff, buy them people first. Deal with your local people first and demonstrate to the rest of the world you have confidence in what they can do.
Okay. Thank you very much. You see, I'm yet to find any comment that has been made by anyone in the U.S. government about having a stake in companies. Because if the Americans went in that direction, then they have so many small companies that they would have to be taking a stake in. Because this thing is aimed more at the small operators than anybody else in the United States. And surely there would certainly be a lot of discussion about a government policy that went in that direction. All right. I think Larry Kudlow is the person that they were talking about. Somebody points out to me, but I don't see anything from him that says exactly that. So, and to me, any such policy would naturally evoke a lot more discussion than I've heard on that particular point. This is down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, good afternoon.
Right. Now, I want to join your discussion about the contribution to the hoteliers, but started by Mohammed Nasser. But I also just want to make a little point with respect to the COVID situation and people going back to work, leaving children home would be a problem. Now, if you look at the infection rate among children, I think it is almost 0%. They're not spreading infection among themselves too easily. And if they happen to get it, the recovery rate is almost 100%.
But so, the children have been out of school for a while.
No,
internationally?
Yeah, internationally.
But there's been a lockdown in many countries.
No, but I'm saying there's a lockdown, but a lot of people still dying.
Yeah, but my information is that on the issue of the children, there's still... There are unanswered questions, and I suppose when people go back to school, you're going to see what is happening there, because as you know full well, the children tend to pick up colds very easily.
That is true.
And as a result of that, people are cautioning that the children can carry the virus home, and then their parents and grandparents have real problems as a result of that. It won't impact on the children as much.
Right.
You know?
Right. It wouldn't impact as much. And I think I was hearing doctors saying, though, that the spread rate is pretty low. But what I'm thinking is, because you have to find a solution, parents cannot go to work and leave children home. And they can't remain home and don't feed the children because they need money. So it is a dilemma. So what I was thinking is that I would like to suggest that we open back at the schools and let the children go to school. The teachers in particular will have to be more distant than the children, right? And see how that works. I believe eventually you got to come around to it anyway, because you can't keep people home.
Yeah, because to do the distance learning that we are talking about will require a larger number of people involved in supervising these children. That's the other side of the distance learning point, huh?
Yeah, yes, and if you talk to any of the parents involved in it, it is so, so very involved. And especially for the younger children, it is really a challenge. The older children, I guess, are getting through a bit better. But the younger ones, it is really a problem, 4 years and 5 years old and so. Now, the matter here with NASA, NASA raised an important point, right? But I think that you made a suggestion and he bit at it. He was saying that basically with the government pumping all this money into the tourism sector, mm-hmm. they should give back something in return, or there should be a benefit for the government. And you asking what he didn't know. So you said being a shareholder. But I don't think he meant being a shareholder, because I think that could become a bit tricky after a while.
What would you have as your alternative approach?
Right. My alternative, I can get it now, but let me just remember that. You asked him a question to when was the last time they got money. Let me just tell you that in 2009, the government gave the hoteliers $9 million. That was grant, so they didn't have to pay back, right? That's the last I know of.
Okay.
Now, my suggestion is this, that the government could put aside grant money again, because you call it stimulus. This stimulus is intended, and it was intended then. Even back in 9/11, 2001, it was intended that the money, a large portion, would be spent back locally, I guess, with manufacturers and the hoteliers, and the agricultural people, and stimulate the economy, because it would filter right down to a lot of small people. But that don't usually happen. Most of that money goes overseas, because the items that they can purchase locally, they can also purchase overseas for less. So what I am recommending is that the government allow the hoteliers to give them access to the value of money, but not the physical money. Suggest that, look, you can go and buy what you want from wherever. Suppose you wanted furniture, you can buy it from China, or you could buy it locally. If you buy it from China, right, use your own money. If you buy it locally, we're still not giving you the money. Select any of the furniture manufacturers locally, purchase from them, and then submit your invoice to us, to the government, and the government would pay the manufacturer. And in that way, you'll be encouraging them to buy locally, but you would not be stifling them, because they can still buy overseas if they want. But if they're going to take taxpayers' money, then something should filter back down to the taxpayers, like Mohammed Nasser was saying. And since you can't control these people, because I remember when Sanders came here and got all of these concessions, the hoteliers said they want them too. And Chris Sinclair had to bow to them and give them the concessions. But he said, in so doing, I want you also to agree and to sign a document suggesting that you will buy locally. Mm-hmm. And they said to Chris Sinclair, we are going to buy locally, but we are signing a document to that effect. And in truth, nothing that they could get from overseas, they didn't buy locally.
Okay.
And I can tell you, we have a very hard time with the hotels in this sector. I have one who said...
You know, this is the same kind of discussion that we had a little earlier about how... The same point Mr. Nasser was making, that we talk about how the artisan street people, and we don't talk about how the artisans are treated. It works both ways, you know. Don't think for one minute that we don't appreciate that local manufacturers can also create a problem where they're not treating their customers as well as they should. There are a lot of people who talk about the need to buy local, and that's to be encouraged. But standards and integrity are also crucial in all of this. So in that, the same way I had to take into consideration both points on the other issue, it is as relevant in this one. Now, someone sends me here something from the New York Times. It says that the article talks about the Treasury receiving warrants to buy stock in the airlines, okay? But remember, even if that is so, that is not across the board. That may be as it relates to the airlines, because there are a large amount of money that the Americans are now pumping into the airline industry, all right? But it's worth talking about, it's worth examining, because, you know, we have to come to terms with how we're going to deal with our own problems here, all right? And is this an opportunity to bring about fundamental change? Is it? Is this an opportunity to bring about what we talked about years ago? What was it? Economic enfranchisement? Let me see. Thank you all very much for participating in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. And thanks to Dennis Johnson, the technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.